Hello and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. This is a commentary episode, so that means we are watching Season 7, Episode 12, Welcome to New York, of NYPD Blue, while recording this episode of NYPD Blue Balls. So it might be a good idea to watch it along with us. We're using Hulu to watch this episode. I have just double-checked and confirmed that NYPD Blue is back on Amazon Prime, so you can stream all of the seasons there, and I believe they have the original edits and not the syndication edits. So it might actually be better to use Amazon for some of these episodes. I don't think we have any more syndication episodes to worry about going forward, but if we do, we'll break out those Amazon versions. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. I hope to catch you at the end of the episode, but just a little warning. We had a bit of a hiccup towards the beginning of the intro where we had to start and stop again. I tried my best to keep the flow going so it stayed on track with the episode. If it doesn't, I apologize. Peace. One, two, three, go. Hello, everybody. Welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. This is episode 12 of season 7. Welcome to New York. Got a lady in a wheelchair. And starting off with the famous faces right away, somebody that I know you'll recognize.
100%. One of my favorite characters from Deadwood. I don't know his name as an actor, but he plays fucking Dan Doherty.
His name is W. Earl Brown, and
sure.
He's been in a bunch of stuff. He was in Something About Mary. He's been.
You want to know what else he is in that you would know?
What is that?
He is the crazy, like random off guy that you run into in the Last of Us video game.
Oh, he, yeah. Like,
that's him. 100% it's him. It's his face. It's his everything. I looked it up because when they were talking about a TV show back then, I was like, they need to just get him to do it. Because I was watching Deadwood at the time and was in love with him.
But yeah, he's been in a little bit of everything. Pretty.
He's in another episode of NYPD Blue.
Yeah, and it seems like he's gotten an episode on just a bunch of random shows, but yeah. Earl Brown.
I can't express how much I love him on Deadwood.
Well, you love Deadwood, period. Deadwood is one of your like top fives, I would imagine, based on
top two. It's top two.
What's the other one?
The Wire.
And where is NYPD Blue on the list? If it's The Wire, and
it's top five.
Here is that break I was talking about. It is not very long, but I hope that I have lined it up with the episode so that it keeps going forward right about now. Shit. Where are you at in the credits?
They just said Dennis Franz.
Okay. Fuck. The goddamn computer stop the recording on us. I'll just have to adjust it.
Did you hear the pause?
No. Keep going. I'll just.
Okay.
Anyway, this is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And Kyle just got done telling how it's only in the top five under Deadwood and The Wire.
Yeah, and then Better Call Saul's in there right now.
I gotta watch that. I've heard only great things.
And then I bounce back and forth between Community and The Office.
Hmm.
Because they have about, in my opinion, this is going to go off on a tangent and just going to upset you. I think they have the most equal amount of like solid seasons.
All right.
Like, I think if you add those solid seasons together, I think you get about four from each show.
Yeah, I get you.
But I think when, like, the overallness of each season, The Office's, like, quality is better. So that's why it bounces back and forth to me.
All right. I mean, we could keep talking about that, but we are talking about this show.
Sometimes Community is so fucking funny that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You just, like, forget.
And Community.
Anyways, yeah.
Yeah, Community kind of has this, like.
Anyway, sexual assault.
I was going to say Community.
This is a back-to-back. This is a doubleheader. This is a doubleheader for them, for the Blue. Back-to-back essays.
They were really in a. They were really working with a theme when they were writing this season. Well, this woman named Anya, who's 23, is brought in by her parents, who are obviously very concerned. But they immediately separate them because she's an adult and can tell the story. And they know she'll be more honest if she doesn't have her parents leering at her when she's talking about what happened. And they try to separate her, like, a bunch of different ways, and eventually they just, like, kind of, like, shove them outside the door. It's pretty, pretty flagrant.
Well, she looks, like, so nervous to begin with, and, like, her parents are doing all the talking. It's not helping the sitch.
No, not at all. Now, this scene, which goes on for a very long time, and this episode is probably, in terms of our recent episodes, I've wrote the least amount of notes, because there's a lot of scenes where it's just this woman brutally describing her experience.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not going to write all that out, but there's a lot of her explaining that three gentlemen put a hoodie over her and said, "Walk with us or we'll kill you," and she accurately counted in seconds them taking her to an apartment and then raping her and bringing in two more men to do so. And she mentions that it all took 90 minutes, which she counted by the second, which is probably one of the most horrifying parts of this situation to me.
That has to be something specific that
Bill Clark,
one of the writers, yeah.
Where the consultant was like, "Yeah, a woman came in and talked about this once."
I had this case where, let me tell you something crazy. I had this case where it's not super gruesome, you know, it's fucked up, but this girl like was able to, and she like retraced her step, like, you know, some shit like that. Like, I could see them be like, "Yeah, bro, yeah, it's fucking weird, it's crazy."
And I do want to give a shout out to this actress who plays Anya. That's Emily Burgle.
I feel like she was in a lot of things when we were younger.
You know,
like she played a lot of different. What am I saying? She played a lot of different like daughters or like girlfriends or like friends of like the main character's like daughter and like TV shows and shit. Like, it just feels familiar.
Yeah, it's a lot of TV shows, a lot of like, she's been in the Law and Orders, but also the CBS shows and the
Well, you ain't nobody unless you've been on a Law and Order. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, you ain't working unless you get one. So. But yeah, this
you ain't
scene,
nobody. You ain't nobody if you ain't been around that baloney.
But yeah, this scene was brutal.
This scene is still going. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's very long and it's very specific and direct. And mostly Russell like comforting her, because she's like, "I didn't fight them off," and like, "There were five of them." And they threatened to kill you. Like, there's nothing you could have done, and remembering all of this was, like, the best thing you could have done, which I know doesn't help, but it helps us, but it doesn't help the situation.
So, comparing it to...
Should we? Before you say the second part, should we? Because I think I know where you're going.
Comparing it to what happened to from our last episode,
mm-hmm.
Do you feel that they are being like way from the initial jump, do you feel like they're being a little bit more like nicer and open towards this girl than they were the other girl?
Yes. I also think that there are many reasons why it's different, but I do think one of the main reasons was they didn't have a doctor like running roughshod over their questions.
Fair.
Like they were immediately standoffish because like the doctor's like, well, what are you going to talk to her about? It's like, what the fuck do you think we're going to talk to her about? Like, what do you think we're doing here?
They seemed to be able to handle the parents just fine.
Yeah.
You're telling me they can't handle a crazy doctor?
There are differences. There are clear differences in the way this is treated.
Do you think it was also an interesting choice to make the girl that doesn't have like the case work out be a black woman, but the girl that does, spoiler, it's a white woman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also,
and also it's kind of weird that like to prove like, and part of the whole thing of like, first of all, this fuckface.
Yeah, I was like, are we gonna talk about this fucking asshole?
This fuckface, I love this guy. He's one of my favorites. Only because of like what comes from it.
Yeah, he's the nephew of the DOA and Simone or Sipowicz and Sorensen's case, and he's a fucking dick. Who has basically come in to just tell him, like, yeah, his ex-boyfriend did it because they're gay. They're a bunch of gay dudes.
They're a bunch of homos. Yeah, just coming in hot.
And he acts like
He says some smart-ass line to John. I don't know what it... it's just talking shit.
Well, he basically was like, have you ever met this guy from this place? And he's like, no. And he's like, well, I thought you might have met him around... Because all the gay people bone each other is the implication. And,
it's the implication.
And then he drops the F-bomb for homosexuals. And then acts like a complete dick to the detectives. And they're basically letting him know, like, no, we fucking don't like you. Like from the
I missed it, but like Sipowicz has a funny line. He's like, "It's shocking that people don't take a shine to you right away," or something like that.
And then he also brags about how much money he has. He's like, "I don't need to kill my uncle. I am rich." And then he throws a notebook at Sorensen, and then Sipowicz is like, "Don't throw things at us, or we'll throw things at you."
And then he says something to him in Italian, and that just pisses the points off because, you know, racism.
And then he comments on Danny lying to Blake DeWitt's mother to get his new phone number and address. And I think he calls them dogs, and then Sipowicz is like, watch yourself. Even though that is pretty devious. It's like, oh, I was going to talk to Blake. Do you have his number? I also love how Sipowicz was like, wrap it up as if he's going to talk to that dude's mom for a long time. Are you there? Kyle?
Hello? Are you here?
Yeah, I was like, I can't... I was like, did it just end? And then, boom.
Everything you're saying.
And then, boom, John was like, keep thinking you're straight. Which is fucking dope. And then, simply...
what is the point of this?
No idea. Sipowicz has to then ask him, like, you think he's one of those, you think he's gay?
You think he's one of those homos?
It was just kind of like a, I have to be 100% positive that John thinks this dude is gay. And it's like, why? What does it matter?
Because then if John thinks he's gay, it's okay to talk about it. Oh, but Sipwith can't openly be like, oh, that guy is like hiding his homosexual tendencies, because then it can be offensive. But if John thinks he's gay, and that may help, I don't know, it just helps.
So here we have Anya going over all of the steps of what happened.
Do you think she's the ghostwriter for George R. R. Martin? Because she's like in the description. I think she's like really, really, like really into
hammering it all out. Making sure you understand exactly what's going on.
Nah, she's just like really into Tolkien and like loves an adventure quest. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't know if retracing the steps of a gang rape is much a adventure quest, but you know, we're here.
It's kind of like when Bilbo left the Shire.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when Bilbo left the Shire, it's a lot like it because it was horrific and shouldn't have happened. We're talking about the films, right? The anyways, so they bring in this guy Blake, who I can't tell if he's doing a good job.
Looks familiar.
His name is Misha Collins, and he's been one of those actors who's been in a little bit of everything on TV, but I'd had nothing that jumped out at me.
So you asked if he's doing a good job.
Yeah, I don't know if he's doing... I think he's doing a good job, or if he's, like, just not doing much in this episode at all.
But isn't he... That's what he's supposed to kind of be, right? He's supposed to be kind of this, like, dumb, like, not from New York type of guy who doesn't quite get it. Or am I wrong?
Well, he is the object of affection for when we find the true killer and kind of the motive of the killer. But he's kind of played like just a naive young dude who finds out that his ex-boyfriend was murdered, possibly. Right now he's just missing with his taupe Mercedes. And then his demeanor like slightly changes to like almost disappointed when he finds out that his ex-boyfriend has died.
And they are exes, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they are exes.
Yes, the older gentleman, I think his name's Walter, he dumped him.
Was that a stereotype?
About gay folks?
Yeah, like older gay men with younger gay men.
I mean, I don't know. Is it a stereotype for older straight men and younger straight women?
Wow, Jesus Christ. You could have just said yes.
I don't know. I do think that it's kind of like... I think there's a stereotype of like... the older gay rich guy who like keeps boy toys around. I think that's one of the stereotypes that exists out there. So this part of the scene is really interesting to me because like Baldwin Jones comes by to help.
Kirk, this is like NYPD Blues version of like The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings,
because there's a lot of walking like, to Mordor.
Yeah, and Jones is kind of like Gandalf, shows up halfway, gives a hand.
Jeez,
she's like clutching her purse like she's carrying something she doesn't want to let go of. Like, yeah. I think this is just an allegory for Lord of the Rings.
Yep, I think that's what they were trying to do here with this 100%. Story. They were like, you know what's rad? Yeah. Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings. Let's put it in a sexual assault case.
But it is weird. Like, I was just mentioning, it's weird that Baldwin comes in halfway just so that there's a man for this part of the scene.
Is that why they called him in?
I think so. I think they're like, just in case we see somebody. Because this dude walks by Carlos, who is played by a famous face.
He's been in everything.
What's up?
This dude's been in everything.
Oh, yeah. His known for is hilarious because his top known for is being like an unnamed guy in Cobra. the Stallone movie.
Well, of course.
But yeah, basically the woman's like, that dude's a son of a bitch for standing there pretending he doesn't know what happened. And then Jones immediately is like, yo, Carlos, you're coming in. And it was like, oh, shit. Like, I'd be scared to fucking death if, like, it went from...
She does a good job of not, like, getting, yeah. like, great emotional.
Even though...
When she hears his
yeah.
voice.
Even though just the look she kind of gave when she heard his voice was kind of perfect. Of, like,
yeah.
she doesn't really give up that, like, oh, my gosh, that guy did this to me. Like I
and
said,
either he does a really good job acting, or I don't know, but he acts like he's like seen her before.
Well, that dude. Now this actor, which, I did not think did a good job. No offense to Stephen Shaw.
Why not? What didn't you like about him?
Well, he's doing a guy that thinks he's smarter than everybody in the room. Sure, we've seen that uh-huh. before. But he's way more annoying about it, and like maybe he just didn't get the I don't know what it is. I don't like him. He annoyed the fuck out of me. I found myself like not really paying attention to him. I was like, I get it. You did it. You think you're smarter than everybody.
Well, he reminded me of people that I've met here, so I thought he did a pretty good job.
Maybe that's it. Maybe I just never met this man in real life. But yeah, he's just kind of...
Yeah.
He's toying with them, saying like, so you have this missing guy, you think I did it, and now you're going to beat me to get a confession, and you hate gays and this and that and the other... And what's weird is he does eventually break down their entire shtick. Where he's like, you threaten me, and then he looks like he's the supportive, listening, understanding soul. So it's like, yeah, he did kind of play you guys. He knows exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, he knows. He knows the game. Excuse me. Yeah, he knows the game, so, and that's what I think annoys Andy, because it's like, he's getting at me, and he's gay.
Jeez. I also love how they were like, and this guy giving me the soulful look of subliminal understanding, and then it cuts to Ricky Schroeder's face, is like, no, he's doing the face of a 12-year-old.
Yeah, he's doing the face of a man who doesn't know how to act. That's why I can't get mad about the guy sitting across from him, because that dude's trying something.
He's giving you the silver spoon.
Like,
Sipowicz gives a racist comment, and then the other guy calls him a vile pig, I think.
Let's be real. Sipowicz has been called worse, so.
Oh, yeah.
No need for that, baby.
But then they get him because they say, I'll tell him that he's on his own, and that you're going to be taken off. And then he's like, you let him know that I'm going to widen the loop.
Whatever that means. That's such a weird, like, are we fucking, like, are you guys going to be, are you, like, searching for him? Like, what's happening?
I also love that because Sipwitz couldn't pass up on the opportunity, was like, so you could stick your weenie through it? Ha! Huh? Like, he had to shout at him as he's going down the stairs.
I want to believe he tried to make his voice crack. during that time.
Oh, you're going to widen the loop so you can stick your dick in it? Just like, okay, man.
I got mad.
The important thing, and this is something I wanted to bring up and get your opinion on. So they let John observe their conversation with that man. And then Sipowicz, like, I don't know if this is, like, one of the most offensive things he's ever done. He, like, goes to Fancy and he's like,
no, I doubt it. I doubt it, Kirk. Come on.
But he's like, look, Fancy, we had John watch this guy because John has pretty good gaydar. So we started thinking maybe he knows gays more than we know gays because this is a gay murder. And it's like, what?
I mean, at face value, yeah. Does it sound bad what he's saying?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. But he's not wrong.
Well, he's.
It's not like if he found out that Danny had a like, what's the word? A
gay experience. Like,
No. He was in narcotics for like 13 years.
Yeah.
And then like a drug thing came up. You know, Sipowicz would be like, oh, or if it was Jones, he's like, oh,
a bias thing.
Yeah, I went to Jones on this because he's done this his whole life, blah, blah, blah. He knew more than me, or we let him walk, listen in on it. Or we talked to Jones, and Jones said this, like, you know, you should really listen to it.
And then, like,
I don't know.
It just was, I think it was a good idea, but he has no idea how to present it. Which even Fancy calls him out, and he's like, I think we know everybody involved is gay. But...
You know, it just keeps, you know, it's like, gay John. It's like, damn, dude, like.
And then John,
it's funny.
And then John is nervous to explain because he's like, never done this before. And he's probably taking it very seriously because he's like, I'm not a police officer. I'm sure there's rules about this shit.
And also, like to have him talk to Fancy is kind of official, like. And he knows that people who talk to Fancy don't just, like, talk to him, you know, like, I don't know, like, and he's trying to tell Fancy, like, this, like, if, what if he's wrong, you know what I mean? At the same time, like, he's not a cop either, like you were saying. There's a lot that goes into that.
And the whole point they're trying to get out is when this new boyfriend, Philip, comes back with the lawyer, if we can somehow separate them so that Blake doesn't need Philip or his lawyer, that guy is going to fire his lawyer and try to take care of this himself because he needs to be the only thing in that boy's life, as he put it.
Well, it's, I don't know how he knows that. Like,
well, I think he's assuming. There's a lot of assumptions, but the assumptions are based on the fact that they think John has a better understanding of these two dudes because he's gay. Which is...
Yeah, there's just a lot of assumptions in there.
And it all started because Sipowicz was like, you think that guy's gay? And then he's like, yeah, totally. He's like, John could just have been fucking with that guy.
Like, I wish there was a scene where, like, Sipowicz is just sitting there rubbing his frog, like, I just can't solve this case. And then he just, like, looks up and he's like, hey, wait a minute. You're gay. They're gay. What do you think?
So, this scene, this guy is probably one of the most hateable, like, two-scene characters of my recent memory in, NYPD Blue, because he basically is like, oh, I'm uncomfortable. The women detectives were staring daggers at me. And then Jones is like, okay, you want to talk in here and then we'll figure it out? And the guy's like, okay, so, like, I'll be honest. Those guys, there's like a party in there last night. And Jones is like, what kind of party? Drugs? He's like, no drugs. He's like, then what kind of party? He's like, you know, they had girls in there. He's like, girls? He's like, yeah, and they just kind of like offered to let me have sex with one. And he's like, okay. He's like, did she seem like she enjoyed it? And like the dude's like, well, you know, she was a little tired.
I don't know.
And it's like, bro, hey, hey, man, hey. You admitted to rape.
Wrong. Hey, wrong answer.
Wrong answer.
She's a little tired, not on the board.
Funny, I'm looking through the Rolodex here. Not acceptable as a fucking answer.
She's a little tired. We surveyed 100 people. She's a little tired was not on the board. Sorry.
Oh, my God. And then, like, the look on Jones's face. Like, I don't think he's hiding it at all. And this guy's just like, you know, like, it happens. You know, dude stuff.
What I also like about it is... the guy's, like, not nervous.
Yeah.
Like, you would think, like, the night before, if you walked into a room and had sex with someone you weren't supposed to, and it was probably unconscious, excuse me, and then the next day you're being hauled off to the police station, you'd probably be a little worried about it.
And then he also said the phrase, fifth man in, what the hell? And it's like, do you think there's a limit? You think there's a cutoff there, Carlos? You think they go like, oh, well, we're only going to prosecute the first four. The first four?
Oh, Kurt, I forgot to tell you, you missed that day at the bro meeting. five is the cutoff.
You missed that day on the bro meeting. Yeah, yeah, I just couldn't make it that day. Ugh.
Fight the cutoff, sorry, bud.
Egg on my face.
Yeah.
So Philip came in with
you. Would have looked dumb. You would have looked dumb when your friends asked you.
Oh my God, I don't have any friends that would do that. Just want to say that out loud. Also, here Philip brought the lawyer and. Basically, they separate the lawyer from Philip and go to Blake and be like, hey, did you refuse your right to counsel? He's like, I did. And the guy's like, I think you need to talk. He's like, get out of here. You're done. Scat. Also, there's a thing about baseball players. He's like, I only follow gay players. And it's like, how would you even do that?
Well, in New York, I bet you, like, going out to clubs and shit, you know, you might run into a few here and there, and just kind of follow them from there on out.
You just,
I don't know, Kirk.
You just keep it on the Dean low?
the Dean low.
It's time to, Tina, turn the clocks ahead. So this is where they just get this guy all flustered up until he's like, well, what is it going to take to get me to talk to him? And he goes, getting rid of the lawyer.
Question. Do we think the lawyer is one, a friend, and two, gay?
Maybe.
Only reason I say that is because just based off of this guy's character, I feel like he wouldn't hire anyone to represent him that wasn't gay.
Maybe. That's not a. And then.
And I hope he hears that and then feels like, hey, yeah, I did my character justice.
And now, what I loved about this scene is they're like, just fire your lawyer and then you'll be able to talk to Blake after we talk to you a little bit. And then he shouts, you're fired, and Sipowicz stands right up. He's like, let's go talk here. And it's like, you are fucked, dude. Like, Sid Poitz was like, just waiting for those words.
That's all he was waiting for, yeah.
He was just waiting to hear them, and he was like, I'm out of here.
That's all he wanted.
I think the reason I don't like this character is because I felt like this interview is too short for the quick turnaround this guy does. Because essentially, they have to turn him around to admit.
I mean, you have to count kind of the whole what happened in the beforehand, like with the lawyer and everything. They're kind of getting him stirred up, so it's part of it. And that's why when they get him into the box, I think he's ready to just like blow, because they kind of already worked on him a little bit.
And what's odd, and like, it seems like this O.J. Simpson metaphor is like way too fucking long and has nothing to do directly with this guy.
Yeah, but why not?
Like he's like, oh my gosh, if O.J. Simpson was left in a room with me after waiving counsel, he would never have gotten out of there without confessing. And then somehow that's supposed to make this guy like shut down,
afraid,
even though he was running circles around both of them earlier in the day.
But was he really like running circles? Like circles?
I mean, he did pretty good.
Circles? We're gonna say circles? Like he was running circles around him?
Well, now that I'm watching it again and thinking about it, I think it's because he realized, like, oh shit, I fired a lawyer. Like, that was the dumbest thing I could have done.
Yeah.
Because it's a little different when you come in and talk to them willingly, and then you just don't happen to get a lawyer yet, but to have a lawyer and then decline it is probably, like, way worse.
Maybe just a little bit.
So now he's like, oh, maybe I'll talk to him about what happened. Maybe,
But also, I mean, I find it sad that you don't think he does, or you don't like him. I think he does a pretty good job.
I don't know. Maybe it's just the like pacing of his scene.
Maybe it's your hatred towards
the gay community. I don't have a hatred of the gay community, Kyle. I knew that's what you were going to do.
You've hated them ever since Jump Street.
John is like my favorite character on the show. How could I?
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, I have a daughter too, so we shouldn't sexually assault people.
Fuck you, Kyle. I don't have a problem with gay people. And then I didn't like another reason I had no notes. Like, this scene is literally a lot of time of just looks and then eventually a hug. There's a lot of subtext to it, but like, that's really what it is just look.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. This is what I think, man. I think this guy, not the guy in all black, the other guy with the funny haircut, is supposed to be like some like dude who's not from New York. Like some like, you know, Midwestern dude. And he's supposed to be kind of like, you know, not all there. And they're trying to take advantage of him.
And they kind of share
this. He's got a big dick.
And they share this embrace, and then it seems like Danny's a little uncomfortable about it for some weird reason. So here's Anya's parents again, who are like, I think it's time for Anya to come home. And it was at this point that they're nice to them and explaining that she still wants to stay to help out. But at this point, they'd be like, she's 23, so fuck off. Like, she'll come home when she's fucking
ready.
Yeah,
but I get it being their parents. Like,
yeah.
If something like that traumatic happened to your daughter, and then all of a sudden, like, she's not around you, and you don't know how she's doing, like, you'd want to know something.
But I do think, like, that's also solvable with, like, hey, can we see her for a minute? Just to see how she's doing, instead of, like, we want her home.
Yeah, like, Like, give her, call the precinct, ask if you could talk to her. I don't know. There's so many other things you could have done.
And then this guy is like, well, it seems like they're working on something. They'll bring her back. I think we can leave her to it. And then she's like, she gets a little snippy.
That's such a dad thing, like, to step in with, like, reason.
A fine way to end it. And then, I love this because Russell is like, come here, take a look at this shit.
Yeah, take a look at how your daughter's feeling. Like, do you think she's, like, hurt now? And Jones has to sit there awkwardly and, like, ashamed and shit.
Well, it's also, like, because they hired Jones, who is just this giant dude. Like, every scene that he's in like this, it's always kind of like he'll stick out. Because it's just like you open the door and there's just this giant dude in there with her. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Anytime he's standing next to Medavoy and you're just like, oh, yeah. They are the opposite.
Oh, yeah. Medavoy is a tiny old man. And I don't mean that. This episode didn't feature a lot of Metaboy.
Oh yeah, and maybe he had the day off or some shit, or the week off for this filming. And then
this is season what, 7? Yeah, he probably has it as contract, but he gets a week off randomly.
Yeah, I mean he was there at the beginning. Only him and Sipowicz are like season one people.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Oh, Fancy.
And Fancy.
You're racist, dude.
I forgot.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
We're
going.
They make a joke to John about like doing his paperwork. Because he helped out with the case. And then John is like, oh, can I talk to that Blake guy who's obviously kind of in shambles because his current boyfriend murdered his ex-boyfriend? And these two, Sorensen and Sipowicz, have a conversation that's like, probably wants to exchange phone numbers, and then Sorensen's like, well, he could do worse than John. And it was like, I don't know. It felt like straight dudes wrote that shit.
Yeah, probably. It's not the best.
And then this...
It's definitely not the best, but it's like, I like that they use Danny sometimes to be, like, the guy who, like, is telling, like, supports, like, hey, you're being old, stop it.
Also, I really liked this scene only because, like, there is some accusations in one of the books I read. Not so much about gay people, but about anybody in the LGBTQIA community that doesn't match up a certain... way they're kind of demonized, but this scene was kind of like, here's just two gay dudes, it's not about like hooking up, it's not about trying to get with each other, it's just one comforting the other one.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, it's not like, oh my gosh, I want to meet this guy and talk to this guy, or hey, we're both gay, let's talk about gay stuff. It's just more like, hey, like, this has been really shitty.
We're both gay. Let's talk about gay stuff.
That's what they do, right? I mean, I don't go to the meetings. I don't have a card.
Yeah, you can't even make a straight white guy meeting, so shit. You can't even make the straight white guy meeting. Delete those.
Oh, my God. But I did enjoy that. It's just like, John... going like, I can understand why this guy's head is all screwed up. I want to go talk to him. Let him know it's going to get better. and, you know, it'll be all right. And it's not like a, you know, it's not like any weird thing. It's just...
Yeah, but agreed. At probably this time during this era, whatever, it's probably something nice to see on TV. 100%. But you can definitely tell that two straight guys wrote it.
Probably, yeah. Fair.
Or it was written by a straight guy. Or it was written by a straight guy. But, yeah.
And that actually ended the episode, that conversation, which is kind of cool for John Irvin. Anything
it's
else?
Funny about... when you get to like, it's funny when you get to like things like that. Where like, it's like now, right? Someone would watch that and be like, wouldn't look at that as something that's groundbreaking, and wouldn't look at that as something as like, wow, that was a big step for like, you know, the LGBTQIA community, or I hope I got it right. I'm really not trying to offend on that one. or like they would just be like, or like what I did, kind of like, you know, you could tell that's written by two white guys or something. But at the same time, like at the time, it was still a big deal.
Oh yeah,
like probably to have that scene because it's probably the biggest show on TV talking about a subject that at the time not a lot of people want to talk about, so it's kind of a big deal. But
and it was two characters where,
but Oscar's so white, Kirk, hashtag Oscar's so white.
But it's also cool just because like both of those characters, one was like thrown into a situation that involved a murder that had like, it had everything to do with him, but he didn't do anything wrong and just wants to help. And is just a nice guy. And then the other one is just a civilian aide who had insights in, they thought, because of his sexual preferences. And then he actually helps out with the case. And then these two people meet who have done nothing wrong, who have never met before, and they don't plan on being like a couple or anything. And it's just a conversation from one comforting the other, 'cause he knows, hey, someone should do that for this guy. A lot of people probably won't because he's gay, because there's still a lot of homophobia, but this guy could use an encouraging word 'cause he didn't do anything wrong. And he now has to leave this station house knowing his ex-boyfriend, who he was really into, died. And his current boyfriend did it. And he's going to prison.
Well, I mean, he did do something wrong in the eyes of the Lord, Kirk.
Oh, God. Anyway, anything...
To each their own.
For a second, I thought you said titties their own. And I was like, that's right, Kyle. God loves boobs. Anyway, is there anything else about this episode you want to talk about?
You thought I said what? Wait, you thought I said what?
I thought you said... Wait, I thought you said crap. I fucking forgot it.
Must not have been that good then.
No. You said to each their own, and I thought you said titties their own. Which doesn't make any sense, but, you know, you said titties, and.
No, Kirk, what I really said was titties their own, and that's what I call Charlize their own.
Anything else about this episode you want to talk about before we close up shop here?
Yeah. I think the character acting in this episode is on point.
It's pretty good. Pretty darn good. Shout out to
Emily.
Even though
her whole storyline is just her describing a horrible incident to herself. Sorry, not to herself, to us, and that happened to herself. And her just constantly describing like the shitty things that she had to undertake, it makes me want to believe that like it's a story that like someone actually like had happen.
Mm-hmm.
To remember that type of detail, so it kind of makes it like a little interesting to think about a little bit. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, you're right about the character actors. Like, they got a lot of good folks. I kind of turned around a little bit on Stephen Shubb. That was the guy who played Philip. I don't know why. Maybe he just got under my skin. That's why I didn't like it as much. But Misha Collins, who played Blake.
He reminds me a lot. Like, I didn't. Maybe there was. Maybe there was this type of person that I dealt with in California. I don't remember it. But there are people in New York that I've definitely like been around, worked with, or just seen interact, and like reminded me of that person, like their attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, and so I think he did a good job if like that's what he was supposed to be going for, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, Marco Rodriguez, who played Carlos, did a great job. W. Earl Brown of Deadwood fame, killing it.
Dan Doherty.
A lot of good character actors and a decent story, you know. And we had to cut off any sort of ending, but thank you for listening anyway. If you need more NYPD Blue in your life, there's a couple of books out there. True Blue, written about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants. What Would Sipowicz Do? A collection of articles about the show. And Gene Kendall's, an unofficial guide to NYPD Blue, that's on Amazon for 99 cents. As mentioned, the show is on Hulu and Amazon. If you would please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're using to listen to the podcast, that's how it gets seen in the algorithm. And hopefully more people listen, but more importantly, more people watch NYPD Blue. It's the best show ever. If you enjoy my voice and you enjoy public domain film and video games, you can head over to Twitch at Kirk Has Glasses, or even YouTube at Kirk Has Glasses, and check out streams where I'm watching public domain movies and playing video games. Thank you so much for listening and supporting. I hope that you continue to watch NYPD Blue with us. And even if you don't, have a good one. Peace.